Hello and welcome to the first of a series of public law conversations, recorded here at the Gilbert and Tobin Centre of Public Law at the University of New South Wales. I'm Paul Kilday, I run the Centre's referendums project, and today I'm talking to Centre Director Associate Professor Sean Brennan about the High Court's decision in Western Australia and Brown, which the Court handed down just yesterday on Wednesday the 12th of March. The case concerned whether the native title rights and interests of the Nyala people in the Pilbara region had been extinguished by the grant of two mining leases in the 1960s. In a unanimous decision, the court ruled that those rights and interests had not been extinguished. Sean, can you begin by telling us a bit about the Nyala people and their claim over this land in the Pilbara?
Well, it's in an area about 100 kilometres inland from Port Hedland in the northern parts of Western Australia. And the Nyala people were first recognised as native title holders for an adjacent area in 2007. And for this second stage to their claim for recognition to some adjoining land, the parties agreed that they held native title rights over this area, subject to a legal question about the significance of a mining lease on that land. So there were four sets of native title rights that had been recognised. In broad terms, they were to enter and camp on the area, to hunt, gather fish and take natural resources, to engage in ceremony on the land, and to care for places of significance.
And why did this matter end up in the High Court?
Now, all this takes place in their traditional country in the Pilbara, which is, of course, also an area rich in iron ore. And this case was about the Mount Goldsworthy mine, which was the first big iron ore project in the area. The state of Western Australia and the joint venturers, the mining companies, signed an agreement to develop the deposit in 1964. And that agreement was given its own mine-specific legislation. And the deal with the state obliged the miners to go ahead and develop not just the mine and its immediate infrastructure, but also to build a railway and roadways, harbour facilities at Port Hedland, and a town with housing for mine workers and other facilities that was near the mine site. And in return for that, the state agreed that it would issue two mining leases, and it duly did so in 1966 and in 1973. And thereafter, for the next 16 years, from 1966, using an open pit mine method, the company shipped out about 55 million tonnes of iron ore before the mine was shut down in 1982. Once the mining had ceased, this 3 square kilometre site was extensively rehabilitated, the infrastructure was removed, and the town of Goldsworthy was actually closed in informal terms in 1992. So to resolve this second stage claim for native title recognition, the court separated off this distinct question of law. Essentially, did the grant of these two mining leases for this large-scale iron ore project extinguish these native title rights or not? And that issue worked its way through the lower courts to a hearing in the High Court last month and a decision yesterday on the 12th of March.
So the traditional owners asserted that they held these native title rights and interests over the land. And so on what basis did the Western Australian government assert that any native title over the area had been extinguished?
Well, the state put their case in two ways. They said, firstly, that legally to carry out the activities associated with the mining lease, that is the mining itself and the construction of the infrastructure and the housing for the mine workers and so on, that the court should imply into the mining lease a grant of exclusive possession, the kind of rights you get with a common law lease or a freehold grant. In other words, that the miner had to have the right to exclude anyone and everyone for any reason they saw fit in order to carry out their lawfully authorised activities. In the alternative, they said, even if this isn't a grant of exclusive possession, it's such a comprehensive grant in its scope that there's no room for the continued existence of native title rights at the same time, and therefore they must have been extinguished by the grant of the mining leases.
Okay, and what did the High Court decide there?
Well, the court started by saying mining leases in Western Australia aren't like freehold or common law leases. And although this was a big project, and the miner did have to do quite a bit extra on top of the mine itself as part of the deal it had made with the state, in the end, this was just a big mining lease. And the court said for the miner to put its rights into action, it wasn't necessary for it to exclude all people at all times for any reason. In fact, the terms of the grant itself, the lease itself, made clear that government officials and other people had the legal right to come onto the mining lease as long as they didn't interfere with the mining activity. So the court said it's not an exclusive possession grant. It's a grant for a limited purpose that's subject to the rights of others to enter the land. And in response to the alternative argument, they said further, this is not otherwise inconsistent with native title rights, because it was possible for the rights of the miners and the rights of the native title holders to coexist. So I think the crucial thing that's clear from the High Court's decision, from this one and from two native title cases on extinguishment that the courts decided in the last 6 months or so before this one, is this proposition. Extinguishment is a legal conclusion of last resort. Or to use the more judicial language, the claim that an official action like a grant of a lease of some kind has extinguished native title, that claim has to satisfy a test of legal necessity. That means a mining lease or a pastoral lease might restrict the full and free exercise of native title rights for a time, but unless it can satisfy that high test of necessity, once the lease expires, the native title can be enjoyed again to its full extent. And so the court in the end, in this and the two previous cases, has said it's a temporary suppression of native title to the extent necessary approach, rather than a permanent extinguishment of native title approach or model.
So it sounds like in this case and the two previous cases, the court is developing a consistent approach to extinguishment questions. What's your own view about that, Sean? Is this the right direction for the court to be taking in these matters?
I do think it's the right direction for the court to take, and I think that's for several reasons. The first one is the seriousness of the consequences. These are age-old property rights of great intergenerational depth, and so I think it's appropriate that the court should be slow to find that these rights of great longevity are permanently wiped out by official action that may have only in historical time a transitory effect. So the seriousness of the consequences, I think, warrants this approach. But it's also important to remember that the rights of miners and indeed of all kinds of non-native title holders are already protected under the law, because there is a priority rule in native title law which says that in any situation of conflict between rights that have been granted by the Crown and native title rights, then the rights granted by the Crown will prevail. So the grantees, the recipients of those rights from the Crown, don't need extinguishment law to ensure their own rights. And then the final reason, I think, is just one of basic equality, because non-Indigenous landholders don't ordinarily lose their rights forever when Parliament or the Executive gives temporary rights to someone else to do something on the land, if rights in favour of, say, of a miner, for example. Now, native title's never been treated entirely equally under Australian law, but I do think it's appropriate that judges keep the gap as small as possible between these two kinds of property rights, Indigenous and non-Indigenous property rights, when it comes to this idea of temporary suppression rather than permanent extinguishment in the face of official action.
So it's clear that this decision is important in and of itself. But Sean, do you think there are any wider implications that the decision will have in terms of the way in which claimants and governments approach native title issues in the future?
Well, to some extent, the court has said these things before, and they'd certainly pointed to precedent in arriving at the decision in Brown yesterday. But there have been some mixed signals sent about extinguishment law in the court system, and in particular, the High Court yesterday overruled a South Australian decision made by the full federal court about extinguishment on pastoral leases. So we've had a situation where the state and Commonwealth governments have been extremely vigorous in pressing extinguishment arguments through the court system. I think now that the High Court sent the same signal to them three times in a row inside 7 months, that is, favouring suppression to the extent necessary rather than permanent extinguishment, I do think it's time for the states and the Commonwealth to rethink that approach to native title and to consider that the path to certainty lies rather in accepting coexistence and negotiating on that basis rather than continuing to insist in court case after court case that native title's been extinguished.
Thanks, Sean, for taking the time out to talk about that today.
Thank you, Paul.